After lunch on the second day of the trial, it's time for the evidence of Nikki, the girl who found Bea and took her to the Duke's Head. She's joining the court via video link from her home, as she has a health condition that precludes her from coming to the court. We found out later that David, the police officer who set it all up at her place, had to spend the duration of the cross-examination sitting on Nikki's kitchen floor, holding onto her dog to prevent it trying to get to her. Thank God it didn't bark the place down in protest. Despite these issues, Nikki is magnificent, Stacey Dooley on steroids. Plain talking, matter-of-fact, and refusing to be cowed by the defence barrister's tart comments and face that I've now concluded resembles that of a squashed cat, Nikki holds the entire courtroom in her thrall. She explains how she set off on her electric scooter to see her nan, who she checks up on every evening. As she left her home, she saw two youths dressed in black who made her feel apprehensive, so she took another route, and that's what led her to Bea. Being faced with an unexpected and frankly appalling situation of a young girl crying hysterically and clearly in a state of shock, she tried to make sense of it, and in so doing, put two and two together to make five, becoming convinced that the two young men in black must be the ones who assaulted Bea. "These men caused you to be fearful," questions the defence. "If I see someone a little dodgy, I get myself away," replies Nikki. "I thought after that they might have had something to do with it, but I'm not psychic." Later, Mr. Y himself will use Nikki's description of these two unidentified men, which he has, of course, had the opportunity to study in detail, in his attempts to exonerate himself from guilt. The defence barrister uses it to continually cast doubt on the veracity of Nikki's testimony. In addition, she tries to insinuate that it was Nikki who fed Bea the line that she'd been sexually assaulted, that Bea told her she didn't say no. Nikki bats it all back. "I said she told me that she didn't say no enough. That implies that she did say no. Those were her exact words. I didn't say no enough." "So you agree that Miss Canning said she didn't say no?" "No, I disagree. She told me she said no. That's why it was rape." "Were you the one who used the word attack?" "I feel like you're trying to twist my words." The conversation about whether Bea did or did not say no should be irrelevant, because as it says all over the CPS documents, saying no does not have any bearing on whether consent was or wasn't given. But again, for some reason, the defence is allowed to push and push this line of questioning, and no one challenges it. At one point, the defence winds her up so much that Nikki says it straight out. "I'm not sitting here to be made a fool of." Unseen by me as my eyes are on Nikki on the screen, Mr. Y signals to his barrister or sends a note, I'm not sure which. It transpires that he wants a toilet break. Nikki, who presumably can see him, is livid. "Oh, so he gets to say what happens, does he?" she says, deep sarcasm filling her voice. "After what he's done? Oh, right. That's the way it is it?" I glance at the judge and catch her suppressing a smile. "I think you'll find it's me who decides what goes on in this courtroom," she says quietly, as the video link is suspended. Before the jury and Nikki come back, the defence asks the judge to instruct Nikki that she must limit her comments to the facts. Judge to Nikki. "Please remember not to add any opinions of your own." Nikki to the judge. "I can't do that. It's just me, who I am." It's one of those bizarre moments when in the midst of horror one wants to laugh, and the thing that makes one want to laugh seems almost unbearably funny, much funnier than it really is. I love the fact that Nikki is, in essence, saying stick it up your posh backside to that defence barrister. Good for her. I wish I could say it too. One thing that you don't get from the TV dramas is how long it all takes. Both barristers are taking their own notes as they go, and this is especially apparent during Nikki's evidence, as neither of them has heard it before. There are long pauses between questions for tapping at keyboards, leaving all of us in the courtroom, those in the public gallery and the jury, on tenterhooks. Nikki explains how Bea told her she was scared, both of what happened and of whether she had done enough to stop it. She didn't want to call the police as she thought no one would believe her, due to her history of depression and an eating disorder, and she was worried about her parents finding out as she didn't know how to tell them what had happened and did not want to upset and worry them. Throughout, Nikki is genuine, impassioned, frequently driven to the verge of tears. Above all else, she is plausible. And she helped Bea in her hour of need when I should have been with her and wasn't, and I'm so grateful to her for that. After this, the statements from the PC who responded to the 999 call and the SOAT who came to the hospital are read. I can hardly hear anything that is said, so I've no idea if they are favourable for B or not. Caroline can hear a little more, and she isn't encouraged, but I never managed to find out exactly why this is. At last, the day ends and we emerge into watery March sunshine. At least it's not raining for once. Wearily, we head home. Though slow and juddery, the trial has its own momentum. It is an unwieldy, ungainly, but unstoppable steamroller. It feels and is inexorable, like childbirth. No matter what is said, what comes to pass, it will reach its end and a conclusion will be given. This is both good and bad, but most of all, it's exhausting. At home, I feel sick. I can't eat. I didn't sleep last night, and I know I won't tonight. I imagine going back to work, having to tell my colleagues that B was not raped after all, that did not happen to her, that she willingly had sex with a complete stranger, a man she bumped into on the street. I don't know how I'll bear it, how she'll bear it, how our family will bear it.